Now we're holding on Kufsamach Amr Aleph, beginning the 10th and last perek of our Masechta. The perek is called Get Koshut. Now, a get in Gemara terminology often means a shtar. It doesn't specifically mean a get between a husband and wife. So most of the perek is going to be talking about the details of the halachos of how shtaris are to be written. You have various takanas of the Chachamim, as we're going to see throughout the perek, to make sure that a shtar can't be altered or things added in it that shouldn't be, etc. That's going to be the subject of most of the perek. With that said, Tosfos points out that by rights you would have thought that this perek belongs in Masecht Gittin, because after all, that's the only shtar that has to actually be written d'oraisa. Nonetheless, Tosfos says that, and you have the other way around, actually. You have Masechta Gittin contains a perek called Hanizokin, which on the face of it belongs in Seder Nezikin. So Tosfos explains that because here we've been talking about, in the previous perek, we've been talking about over and over where a person is writing a shtar to give away as nechasim, as a body, as a shchivmana, etc. So therefore, it mentions over here, so therefore it talks over here also about the details of the format of shtaris. And as far as perek HaNizokin, the other way around, the Mishnayos there in Gittin, or discussing a whole bunch of things that the Chachamim made takonis mipnei tikkun olam in order to allow society to function properly. The first one of them having to do with gittin, about that if a husband gave a get, he can't now be mevatel it afterwards. So therefore, that leads the Mishnayos over there in Gittin to digress into the whole concept of things that the Chacham did mipnei tikkun olam, and one of them is in connection with Hanizokin, and therefore you have that parak over there. But basically, in other words, so this perek, by rights, should have belonged in Masechta Gittin, but because we're dealing with shtaris at the end of the previous perek, then therefore we put it over here. Now we're going to see, in the Mishnah and in the Gemara that in those times they had two formats of shtar. You had what they called get poshut, which is a regular shtar like we're familiar with. You have one line written, a line written, a line below it, etc. The whole thing on a flat sheet of paper or parchment, and then the edim sign at the bottom. That would be the typical kind of thing. You see it when a ksuba is written. You see it when you see it by a tnoyim and a ksuba. You see it if it should happen to be by a get. Then you have a format that they came up with in those times called get mekusher, and we're going to see in the Gemara where they got the why they did it. But in any case, a get mekusher literally means tied up. So there is a number of differences between it and a regular get, a regular shtar, as we're going to see in the Mishnah. What exactly the basis of a get mekusher is, that you have so most of the Rishonim learn that a get mekusher is basically written like a fan, and it's written pleated. So you write a line of the shtar, then you fold it over, and you sew it, and you sew it closed. Then you write another line, and you fold it over and sew it closed, and so forth. So you end up with something looking. So if you were to undo those stitches, then you would have something looking like a fan. So you'd have a line of writing, then below it a blank line that was folded over, then another line, and then another blank line, and so forth. And the whole thing comes out looking kind of like a fan. Within that, you have different opinions of Rishonim, Rashi, elsewhere. It says that you start out with a blank line. Other Rishonim learn that you start out first with a written line, but whatever. Basically, though, most of them understand that that's what it is it's pleated like that. The Yad Ramah has a unique explanation of it, which is, he says that you have the shtar itself, you have the paper or the parchment that the shtar is written on. You make it that you have strips of the writing medium itself, of the paper or the parchment, sticking out from the top. And then what you do is you have anywhere between three and seven strips like that, he says. Then what you do is you write the shtar, and then afterwards you use those strips to wrap it up, and to you fold it up, and you use those strips to tie it closed. And he explains various things we're going to talk about over here in the Gemara about the kshorim, about the ties of it, and so forth. And he explains it all in that vein. In the Encyclopedia Talmudis, actually, where they have an entry for get mekusher, and they discuss it. They have a picture over there from they found various ancient documents in caves near the Dead Sea. Famously, they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, but they found other documents as well. One of them was they found a group of documents that belonged to a woman called Babata, Bez Bez Tof Aleph. Apparently, what it is like you have the male name Bava, like Bava ben Butta. Apparently, Babata is the feminine form of it. So they found a bunch of documents that belonged to her, and one of them was a shtar chov or shtar mechira or something like that, some kind of shtar that was written in a format somewhat like the way the Yad Rama describes, although there you actually have there's actual strings that were used to roll it to roll it and tie it shut. So that strengthens the possibility that the Yad Rama mentions of the format of it. In any case, what happened was Tosfos discusses on Amud Bey is that by their times it was the whole concept of a get mekusher had fallen out of use. So, which is why the Rishonim weren't familiar with it anymore, which is why they have their various opinions what it looked like. Anyway, so the Mishnah starts off. Get poshut eda mitoichai, a regular get, again, a flat get of the kind of a flat shtar of the kind that we're familiar with. Eid of mitoichai, the edim sign on the inside of it. Like most shtaris, you write the shtar and you have the edim sign at the end of it. Mekusher, as opposed to a get mekusher, eid of me'achorav, there you have the edim sign on the back of it, as we're going to see in the Gemara exactly where they're going to write their signatures. We're going to have two opinions in the Gemara. Now one thing is that Rashbam points out in this connection, you have a concept called which we learned in Masechta Gittin called get kereach, which means literally a bald get. Again, it would be a get or any other shtar. It means, in other words, you have to have the number of edim at least equal to the number of ksharim. So according to the Rashbam and most other Rishonim, that the ksharim over here means the folds, the pleats, then it means that you need one get per pleat. So if the shtar is written, let's say, on seven lines, and then you're going to have seven pleats, one for each line, then it means you need to have seven edim and so forth for any other number of shtaris. According to the Yad Ramah that we're talking about, that you have strips of parchment that are used afterwards to tie it closed, then it would mean those are the ksharim, and it means you need one aid per strip of parchment that you're using to tie it shut at the end. And so in any case, those edim, so the point is you have to have at least as many edim as you have ksharim, however you define ksharim, and if you have less than that, then it's called get kereach and it's bustle. So, but in any case, though, the point is that with a get mekusher, they sign the shtar on the back for reasons as we're going to see in the Gemara exactly how they do that. Where on the back where do they write it? Where exactly on the back do they write it? The Mishnah continues. The Mishnah continues. What if you have a get poshut, a regular get, where regular shtar, where the edim sign on the back, or mekusha, or get mekusha where the edim are written on the front, shneim sulin, both of them would be possible. Why would they be possible? The Rashbam explains because the Chachamim set up the format of how a shtar is supposed to look. So here you didn't do that. You didn't follow that format. Therefore, the shtar is going to be possible. So the Rashbam learns actually, it doesn't mean when we say, for example, posel. So in the case of a shtar, in the case of a get isha, it would mean that the get is posel and the woman is not divorced. In the case of a shtar choiv, for example, the Rashbam says it means that he wouldn't be able to collect from nechosim mishabodim. The Rashbam still learns that you would be able to learn with necho, you still be, you would be able to collect with it from nechosim b'nei chorin. And there are different Rishonim and Achronim talk about that. For example, the Yad Ramah and the Ramban seem to say that the Shtar Mekusher is not considered Eidrus at all, and therefore that would mean, in other words, it would be completely possible. But according to the Rashbam, it's not completely possible. It just means that it would be considered like a milval pen. It would mean that you can collect only from Nechosim Meshabodim, only from Nechosim Bnei Chorin. Anyway, so Rashbam explains again the reason why if the edim sign in the wrong place that it's possible is because it wasn't made k'tikun chachamim. Tosfos brings up another point as well, which is the Gemara is going to explain that one type of shtar in principle can be altered into the other type. A makusher can be unfolded and unsewn and whatever, and turned into something looking very much like a get poshut, and apparently vice versa. Now the Gemara is going to explain further on in the perek that there's also a difference in the dating system that you use in a get poshut versus a get makosher. The Gemara is going to explain later on. Now, we know in those times they used to generally date documents according to the years of the reigning king. So they would write, you know, this document was written in the year in year X of King Pliny. The Gemara is going to explain in a couple of blats that in a get makusher they would add one extra year to that, as we'll learn in a few blats why they would do that. So therefore, so now if you have a get makusher, for example, that was unfolded and turned into a get poshut, you're going to have, it's going to be post-dated 1 year, because it's going to say that it was done in year three of King Pliny, and really that was year two, and therefore it's dated wrongly. So because that would be another reason why, if the Edim sign in the wrong place, then that would be another reason to make it possible. So the Mishnah continues. In fact, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, I remember Kosher Shakos for Edim Vitoche Kosher. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says that no, it's true that a get Kosher where the Edim sign on the outside is possible. He says, I agree with that. But if you have a get Makosher, if the Edim sign on the inside, then it would be Kosher. Because you could undo the stitches or the ties or whatever and make it into a get Kosher, and then the Edim are in the right place. Now, it is true. According to the Rishonim, who learn that the shtar is pleated, it means you're going to have a lot of space between one line and the next, and that's not the normal way of writing shtaris. Nevertheless, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, listen, not all soferim are so expert to, Tosfos explains elsewhere, that not all soferim are so expert to be able to write the lines close together. Some of them end up writing the lines further apart, and therefore the shtar that used to be poshut, that used to be makosher, and now the pleats were unfolded and it became poshut, it's not so bad. You would just say it was an inexpert sofer who wrote it. For that matter, in fact, there are Rishonim who learn that even though they agree that it was Tosfos and other Rishonim agree that it was pleated, but they hold that there wasn't space between one line and the next. Rather, what it would do is they would fold it over, so every two lines are folded one on top of the other. So in other words, it would still be in a fan shape, but instead of being like the way Rashi elsewhere learned in Kedushin and other places learns that it means that you would have a line of writing, a blank line, and then it was folded. Instead, Tosfos learns that it was, you had line after line, like in a regular shtar, and then they would fold it over so that every two lines are one on top of the other. So therefore, there's no space between them, and therefore, again, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says that you would be able to make it a poshut by unfolding and taking out the stitches. All right, the Gemara continues. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, the Mishnah continues. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Hakol Kaminig Amadina. Reb Shimon Gamliel says everything that you do in a shtar has to be according to the local minhag. Now, what is he adding with that? The Gemara is going to explain later on in the perek. It sounds like he's arguing with the Tanakama, but what exactly is the nature? What exactly is the nature of his argument? So we're going to see later on under Kuf Samach Hey Bez Hashem what he's talking about. The Mishnah continues, get poshut eda b'shnayim. Another difference between a regular get and between a get poshut and a get makosher is a get poshut has at least two edim, and a get makosher has to have at least three edim. Again, as we're going to see in the Gemara, why that's so. Poshut shakosa by edechot. If you have a get poshut, if you have a regular shtar that has only one aid in it, or makosher shakosa by shnei edim, or get makosher that has two edim in it, shneim psulim, either one would be possible. The Gemara is going to end up asking, I mean, isn't that poshut? Of course, if you have a shtar with only one aid, then of course it's going to be possible. And with a shtar makosher, if we're saying it has to have two, that it has to have three, then of course it can't have only two. So we're going to see in the Gemara what the chiddush of that part of the Mishnah is. By the way, if you have a Gemara open in front of you, you can see underneath Maseres Hashas or someplace on the side over there in the margin, they're going to show an example of a get Mekusher looking from the side, according to the Rashbam and Rashi and most of the other Rishonim. You can see it's folded back and forth, and the idea would be that in every space that's sticking out on one side is where you're going to have the words of the shtar. Again, according to Tosfos, it would be a little bit different. According to them, you would have the words of the shtar written on all the surfaces over there on one side, and it would just be folded over afterwards. So the Gemara starts off, Menahani Mili. Where do we know this from? Where do we get this, that there are two different types of shtar, a get poshut and a get mekosher? So the Gemara says, and that you have these various differences that you mentioned in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rab Chanina, de Omar Krol." Now we don't really find. You think about it. You don't really find in Tanakh. You don't really find much in the way of people writing shtaros. You have Bechlau. You don't even really find that much in terms of real estate transactions in Tanakh. Really, you find Avraham Avinu buying Ma'aris Machpelah from Ephron. But it doesn't actually say that they wrote a shtar over there, although Bepashtos said, well, we know, we actually, not just Bepashtos, we know, the Chazal tell us, we have the famous thing where Esav tried to argue several times on that he should be buried in the Ma'aris Machpelah, and they had to go bring a document that Esav had sold his rights in the Ma'aris Machpelah to Yaakov. So obviously, shtaris were written, but you don't find it explicitly in the Psukim. The only other real estate transaction, really, that you find in Psukim, you have Yaakov, you know, buying the area by Shechem, which eventually became Yosef's caver. Again, it doesn't say anything about a shtar over there; it just says the purchase price. You have the Harabayis, which David bought from Aravna Hayavosi. Again, no shtar mention. Really, the only place where we have a shtar mention is the psukim that the Gemara is going to bring over here shortly before the Churban. Hashem tells the Navi Yirmiyahu to go buy a field from his cousin Hanamel. This Hanamel himself was a Navi. He was a cousin of Yirmiyahu's, and he comes to Yirmiyahu and says that I have a field that I need to sell. And as it says in the Pesukim of Vogoyalai Akor of Elov, that the closest relative of the person who's selling it should come and buy it in order to keep it in the family. So Hanamel comes to Yirmiyahu while he's in jail and tells him to do that. And Yirmiyahu does it, and they write a document, and then Yirmiyahu davens to Hashem. We have part of the story, the beginning of the story is the Haftarah of Parshas Bahar, where Yirmiyahu davens and he says, Hashem, what was the point of all of this? Here the Kastim, Nebuchadnezzar's army, are about to conquer Yerushalayim, destroy the Beis Hamikdash, and destroy all of Eretz Yisrael. What's the point of buying a field? So he davens to the Eivishter, and then the Eivishter answers back. Yes, there's going to be a Churban. Yes, there's going to be a Golos. But nevertheless, the Jewish people are going to return to Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem tells him as follows: De Omak Amrav Chanina, De Omak Ra. Getting back to the Gemara, the pasuk says, "Sodes Bakesef Yiknu." Hashem says they will in the future they will buy fields in Eretz Yisrael with money. In other words, Hashem is telling Yirmiyahu that don't think this is the end of things. There will be a restoration of the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael, and they will once again buy and sell fields in Eretz Yisrael and then houses and whatnot. And therefore, I want you to write this shtar and I want you to keep it. La'urich yomim, I want you to keep it in a way that will be preserved for decades. And that way, it'll be a simon for everybody that they should realize that the Churban is not the end of Jewish history. Anyway, so Hashem says, Sodes bakesef yiknu, they will buy fields with money. V'chosev v'sefer, they will write it in a document. V'chosev, and they will seal it. V'hoed edim, and they will have edim written on the shtar. So we can darshan as follows, says Rav Chanina. Sodes v'kesef yiknu, when it says they'll buy fields with money, v'chosev v'sefer, and that it will be written in a document. Zeh poshut. So that refers to a regular type of document. Because sefer suggests something that you can easily open up and read, like a sefer Torah. So therefore, so v'chosev v'sefer would refer to a plain shtar. V'chosoim, and then when it continues and sealed, that suggests a different. Now, in Poshet Pshat, you would say v'chosoim means that they sign their names to it. But here, the Gemara is understanding that v'chosoim is mashma something that is sealed up and more difficult to read. So that would be, in other words, Zem Mekusher. That would be referring to a Shtar Mekusher, where again you have to untie it or take out the stitches or whatever you have to do exactly according to the different Rishonim in order to be able to read it. So therefore, so we see the word V'chosoim is referring to a Shtar Mekusher. V'ho'ed edim. Now you have also the pasuk says v'ho'ed edim, so we can furthermore darshan v'ho'ed and have witnesses shnayim. That means regular two edim. The word aid usually, usually means two edim. Like you have the Gemara talks about at the beginning of Sota, at the beginning of Masechta Sota, when it says v'ed ein ba, means the word aid usually means two aidim. Over there it means the aid ain't bothered. There's not even one aid against her that she was secluded. Anyway, so we see that vahoid therefore means to have two aidim, as you regularly have on a shtar. Then when it says in the pasuk aidim shloisha, when it says aidim, which adds something extra, then it means three. So in other words, we would read the pasuk as follows: Sodes v'kesef yiknu. People are going to be buying fields with money in the future in Eretz Yisrael. V'chosed v'sefer. They may write it in a sefer, meaning a shtar poshut. V'chosim, or they may write it in a shtar mekusher. And in each case, v'hoid, if they write a shtar poshut, they're doing two edim. And if they're writing a shtar mekusher, then they've got three edim. So therefore, so you see, hinted at in the pasuk, says Reb Chanina, many of the details that we said in our Mishnah. So what do you mean? Is it two edim or three? Shnayim l'poshet or shloish l'makosher. Two edim for a shtar poshet and three for a shtar makosher. So the Gemara asks, in that case, if all you're telling me is that you have an indication in the pasuk of two edim or three respectively. So v'epochana, maybe flip it around, maybe say that a regular shtar needs three edim and a shtar makosher needs only two. And the answer is, it's more logical. Because a shtar mekusher has more tircha. You have more of a tircha in it. The pasuk is implying that it has to be more complicated, and you have to make it for chosim. You have to make it in a way where it's more difficult to open up and read, and you have to make these various pleats and stitches or folds and or roll it, or rolls and folds and whatnot and ties and whatnot. So therefore, it's more logical that also we would have more edim on it as well. Okay. So there's a hint in the pasuk, the one place in the pasuk where it explicitly talks about writing a shtar, where you have a hint to these two types of shtaris. Rafram Omar Mehocha. Rafram says, I have a similar derasha, but from an earlier pasuk in the same story. Yirmiyahu describes after he arranged with Hanamel to purchase the field. He says, "Va'ekach ha-sefer ha-mikna." I took the book of the purchase, meaning the book again, meaning the shtar of the purchase. Esachosum, the sealed ha-mitzvah, the mitzvah, va'achukim and the chukim, ve'esagolui and the revealed. So again, we can darshan v'ekach ha-sefer ha-mikna zeh poshut. The words v'ekach ha-sefer ha-mikna, again, sefer suggests something which is easily openable and readable. So it means a regular shtar. V'esachosum zeh mekusher. And then when he continues, that I also took esachosum, the sealed, that refers to the get mekusher. In other words, the point would be, according to that, that it would mean that Yirmiyahu actually wrote both types of shtaris. Now, when Hashem is telling him in the last pasuk of that parak, the pasuk that Rav Chanina quoted, that in the future people will be doing v'chosav v'sefer v'chosim v'hoyed edim, then you can say some people are going to be using one, some are going to be using the other. Rafram is saying over here, that explains the Yad Ramah, that apparently Yirmiyahu himself wrote two shtaris. Because not everybody is familiar with shtar mekusher. The problem is, in other words, that the Gemara is going to say later, that the Gemara is going to explain soon, that the reason why they came up with the concept of get mekusher is really because of places where there were koyanim. Now, Yirmiyahu himself is a koyan. Hanamel, his cousin, is also a koyan. And the city they came from, Anosis, which is where the field is located, is a city of koyanim. On the other hand, the whole transaction was being done in Yerushalayim, where they didn't have Yerushalayim, had koyanim in it, of course, but it also had many, many people from other Shvatim. So he explains that actually Yirmiyahu, according to this, had both kinds of shtar written. He had a shtar mekusher written because that's the kind that they did in Anosis, where he and Hanamo came from and where the field is located. But he also wrote a shtar poshut for the sake of, because like this, the locals in Yerushalayim would be more familiar with a shtar poshut. And again, especially the point is, Hashem is telling him to put the shtaris away and preserve them inside a jar so they will last for many years and they'll still be able to find them when they come to build the second Beis HaMikdash. So he has to write a shtar poshut, because by that time, nobody maybe will be familiar with a shtar mekusher anymore. So according to that, then it means that he wrote actually both kinds of shtaris. So sefer ha-mikna, again, would refer to the shtar poshut. As a chosum would refer to zeh mekusher, that would be the shtar mekusher. Then he continues, Ve'esag Golui, and the revealed part, what do you mean revealed? Ze Poshut Sheba Mekusher. That refers to the Poshut part of the Get Mekusher. Namely, in other words, that you have like this. So according to the Rishonim who learn, according to Rashi and the Rashbam and everybody else who learns that it means that that a Get Mekusher is pleaded, what it means is that what it means is you have even though the shtar is written and pleated and folded over like that, nevertheless you still have part of it. You have the loshen. Now you have like this within a shtar. You always have there's a difference between the tofes and the toref. The tofes is basically the boilerplate of the shtar. Think of it like whenever you sign any kind of legal document nowadays, you always have there's verbiage on it, which is the same in every copy of the document. And then you have the particulars that are specific to you, the name, the date, the certain other details or whatever. So in halacha, we call those, the boilerplate is called the tofes, and the specifics are the toref. Take, for example, a get. The most of the Lashon over there is the most of the Lashon. You have a get is written in 12 lines. Most of what you have in there is the Tofes. Then you have the names of the husband and wife and their parents, the name of the city where it was done, the words Hareat Muteres L'chol Adam, which are the basic formula of the get. And then other things like that, those are the toref. Those differ from get to get. The words Hareat Mataris Lachodim, even though it's the same in every get, that's considered part of the toref as well, because it's necessary for the get to bechlal be valid. Otherwise, you don't have a get. Similarly with other shtaris, you have a certain line over there, which is absolutely necessary for it to even be a shtar chov or a shtar mechira or what have you. Then you have the rest of the verbiage around there is called the tofes. So now the Rashbam explains, even within a get mekusher, you're still going to have part of it. The tofes is going to be written in the poshut style. It's still going to be written. That part is not going to be folded over and pleated and sewn or all of that. Similarly, the Yad Ramah, who understands, as we said before, that a get mekusher is where it's rolled up and then it's tied shut using the strips of parchment that are sticking out from it. He says also, by the same token, there's a part of it which is rolled up and then tied like that. Then you have a part which is not. You have a part which is left open and untied. Similarly, in that document that they found by the Dead Sea that I mentioned before, which you can see a depiction of it in Encyclopedia Talmudis. So similarly, they also show that there was a part over there to begin with that was rolled up and tied with strings, and then you had a part that was not. So that's what Raphram is calling over here, Poshut Sheba Mekusher, the part of a Get Mekusher, which is Poshut, which is written plain and unfolded or unsewn or whatever. So that would be what Yumiya is referring to when he says, Ve'esag Golui, the revealed part. And again, that revealed part would contain the Tofus, would contain the regular boilerplate text that you're going to find in all such shtaris. Then he continues, Hamitzvah v'hachukim. He says that he took the mitzvah and the chukim. So what does that mean? Doesn't mean they wrote down mitzvahs and chukim over there. It means elu dvarim shemein poshut l'makusher. It means that those are the dinim that we have in our Mishnah, the differences between a poshut and a makusher, meaning, in other words, that he's saying that I took the two shtaris and I made sure that each one was written according to the details of how that respective type is supposed to be written. What does that mean? As we said in the Mishnah, ze'ed of shnayim, ze'ed of shloisha, that the shtar poshut has two edim, has minimum of two edim, and the shtar mekusher has minimum of three, ze'ed of mitochav, ze'ed of me'achorav, and that the one has the edim written on the inside and the other one on the outside. So all those details are included in the words mitzvah v'chukim, because that suggests, in other words, that you have different mitzvahs and different chukim, different chiluk edinim between one type of shtar and another. Again, the Gemara asks, if you're telling me that you need two and three respectively, you don't see in that pasuk anything about how many edim one versus the other has to have. So for epochana, so maybe not. Maybe it means a get poshut needs three edim and a get makusha needs two. And the answer is, again, as before, mitochshin nisraba b'kshorav, nisraba b'edav. Once we see that the chachamim put so much detail into it, and it has to have all these folds and pleats and stitches or ties, as the case may be, then that means, in other words, that it means that also the Chachamim wanted, therefore, that the number of Edim should also be larger. Okay, so that's another way of learning from the psukim over there, the concept that you have these two types of shtaras, because we're saying in effect that that Yirmiyahu himself wrote that Yirmiyahu himself wrote two shtaras for this for this sale, for this purchase. Okay, the Gemara brings now we have another drasha. Rami bar Yecheskel Omar Mehocha. Rami bar Yecheskel says, At least as far as the number of Edim, I have another drasha where we see that the number of Edim is going to be different in different types of shtar. So he says the pasuk says in Parashas Shoftim, al pi shnayim Edim, or al pi shloisha Edim yakum dover, a matter in based in is established by the word of two Edim or three Edim. You have a different, really, the word is supposed to be over here, Shnei Edim. There's actually two slightly different psukim, both in Parshas Shoftim, that mention the concept of two or three Edim. One of them says, Al pi Shnayim Edim, or Al pi Shlosha Edim, Yumas Hames. The other one says, Al pi Shnei Edim, or Al pi Shlosha Edim, Yokum Dover. So really, it should be over here, Shnei Edim, because otherwise we're kind of combining together two psukim. Anyway, why two or three? Rami by Yecheskel points out, if Tiskayim Edusin B'Shnayim, if two are enough to establish the Edus, Loma Parat L'cha B'Shloisha, then why does the Pasuk have to say three? Obviously, if two is enough, three is for sure good. Loy Malach, so it comes to tell you, Shnayim L'Poshet or Shloisha L'Mekusher. That it means that you have the Shtar Poshet versus you have the Shtar Mekusher, and one of them needs two Edim, and one of them needs three. Again, the epochano, you could argue that it should be the other way around. Maybe it means that a shtar mekusher needs two and a shtar poshet needs three. And again, as the answer as the Gemara gave before, mitochshin esrabe b'kshodav and esrabe b'edav. Once we see that the chachamim put more details into the format of it, then we can assume that they also therefore put in more that there should be more edim in it as well. So we have three different drushas so far. Of how we see that there's a concept of two different types of two different formats of shtar. However, the Gemara asks, "Vahani lahochiu daasu?" You're telling me that these psukim are coming to teach us these points about a shtar poshut versus a shtar mekusher. What do you mean? Kol chad v'chad b'milsehu daasa. In fact, each one of them is needed to teach us something else specific. We're not darshining from it something about the format of a shtar. Namely the Chiddetanya. The first pasuk we learn in a brisa. So maybe we take out the word, but whatever. When it says sodas v'kesef yuknu v'chosav v'sefer v'chosim, eitz a tova kamash malon. It means it's not a statement that you have to have these two types of shtaras. The Gemara mentions earlier in the Masechta that this is Yirmiyahu is giving the Jew, or Hashem is telling Yirmiyahu to tell the Jewish people good advice. Given that you're going to have shtaras for fields, and in this case, in this particular case, Hashem is telling Yirmiyahu, you're going to need to keep this shtar around for a long time because again, we want it to be available when you come back from Golos. And this is not just Yirmiyahu himself. This is that he's telling the Jewish people in general: be aware, there's going to be a churban, there's going to be a Golos. Nonetheless, though, you're going to want to have these shtaras available when you or your descendants come back to Eretz Yisrael years from now. You're going to want to be able to demonstrate ownership of this field. So Eitza Tova, Kamash Malan. So it's a good Eitza to make sure, to write documents and to preserve them in a way that they will be preserved La'orach Yamin. So therefore, so the pasuk is not necessarily telling us about the two different types of shtar. It's just telling us, for example, the pasuk goes on to say that Onesata, Hashem tells Yirmiyahu, Onesata b'chlichores, place these documents into an earthenware jar, Laman Yamdu, Yomim Rabim, so that they'll last for a long time. We see, for example, the Dead Sea Scrolls remained in clay jars and they were preserved, and that helped preserve them over the centuries. So the same way, fine, Hashem is telling Yirmiyahu this kind of Eitza Tova in terms of writing documents and signing them and putting them in jars and so forth. Earlier in Perek Cheskas Abatim, the Gemara mentioned the same point over there, where the Gemara had tried to learn from those psukim the concept of 3 years chazaka, and then the Gemara says that no, Eitza Tova Kamash Malan, that he's just telling them an Eitza Tova to make sure that you have a shtar. And the Gemara gives other examples where we see that Yirmiyahu in those psukim is giving people Eitza Tova. So therefore, so this pasuk is not necessarily telling us that there are two different that there are two different types of shtar, or certainly not the dinim of them. As far as va'ekach ha'sefer amikna, as far as the second pasuk, the pasuk that Raphram brought, it's just hochi habamaisa. It so happens that the pasuk is telling us the narrative that he took the shtar and gave it to Baruch Beneria, as it goes on to say in the pasuk. Not necessarily are we learning from that that there were actually two different types of shtar, let alone that there were different dinim between them. And as far as the pasuk al pi shloisha edim, that would be, we learn from that, a din lahakish shloisha l'shnayim. It means that we have a hekish between three edim and two beplugta de Rabbi Akiva v'rabbanon, where we have a machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the chachamim. What exactly we darshan from that, where the chachamim say that where one point is that you have. That if we're going to be mazim the edim, it means we have to be mazim all of them. It means that if you have two edim, then it's enough to be mazim both of them. And if you mazim, and if you have three edim, then you need to be mazim all three of them in order for the hazama to be valid. Otherwise, we don't have a hazama over here. And Rabbi Akiva learns out over there that Rabbi Akiva learns out. It's all at the beginning of Masechta Makkos, where. So again, the Chachamim learn, the Chachamim learn from it also a point. There's a few things in the Mishnah over there. One thing is it means that just like two Edim can be Mazim two, the same way three can be Mazim two, or two can be Mazim three. We wouldn't say the larger number of Edim means we trust them more. If three Edim come and say that Reuven killed Shimon on day Pliny, And then if three Edim come and say that is, and if then two other Edim come and say Mono Yisim, then we're going to believe the second Edim and not the first one, even though the first group is larger. So that we learn. That's one thing we learn from the comparison of three to two. Another point is that you have to be Mazim all of them. And another point is Rabbi Akiva says that you learn from that, you see from that, that a person joins up with Over Avera, then he gets punished with them, even though he himself wasn't necessary for the Avera to be done. And Kavachoymer people, somebody who joins in with people who do a mitzvah, that he gets a schar, even if his contribution wasn't really needed. In any case, we learn all that from this pasuk, al pi shnei edim, or al pi shloisha edim, so we don't have it available to teach us about three versus two when it comes to the different types of shtaris. So the Gemara is bothered by then. So what are we telling you? You're telling us Rav Chanina, Raphram, and Romi Bar Yechezkel. You're telling us that each one of you, that you have a pasuk that hints at these differences between a get poshut and a get mekosher, but the psukim are not being used for those. The psukim are being used for other points. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela mekosher midrabanan. The concept of a shtar mekosher is drabanan. Okroy, asmachta ba'alma. The various psukim that we brought are an asmachta. They're not the actual source of the din. We have talked about before the concept that, and the Ritva in particular explains, and asmachta still doesn't mean that just the Chachamim looked around and found a random pasuk and now they're using that just to help us remember the thing. He says, adrabba, the concept of an asmachta means that Hashem wanted that this mitzvah should be, that this din should be enacted, but for whatever reason, Hashem didn't decide to make it part of the Torah itself. He left it up to the Chachamim to do it, but he left these hints in psukim available for them to use as a basis to hang it on when they make that takana. So according to that, the vote would be that these psukim are in fact connected with this din. But we're saying that, but we're saying not that we actually learn the din from that, but rather that when the Chachamim decided, for reasons that the Gemara is now going to explain, to make the concept of get mekosher, then they had available to them, Hashem had made available to them psukim in Chumash and in Nach to tell that they could use as a basis for that takana. Okay, the time of my takinu rabbanon mekosher. Well, why did the Chachamim make the concept of a get mekosher in the first place? So the answer is asra dekahani havu. There was a place where there were many kohenim living. V'havu kapti tuva. The kohenim in that place were very makbid. They were very easily angered against their wives, and therefore they might in the heat of their anger they might want to divorce their wife. Now, with a regular Yisrael wants to, if that happens, it's not so bad. He can remarry her afterwards, but a kohen can't. So umagashi nishayhu, so they would be divorcing their wives in their anger, and then the problem is they can't remarry them afterwards because a kohen can't marry a grusha. You have even there's even a pasuk that refers to that point that that Kohanim are very hot tempered. There's a pasuk that says Va'amcha k'mirivei Kohen. Your people are like the Kohanim who argue. So we see that the Kohanim are argumentative and quarrelsome, and the Navi is telling the Jewish people, you picked up on that. An interesting point in that is b'chlal, we usually say that Kohen, the Alpi Kabbalah, we say the Kohen is Isha Chesed. Where do we have that they should all of a sudden have this kapdonus? Rabbi Yonason Eibeshitz actually brings in one of his drushim that the Kohen is Isha Chesed, but then when the Jewish people were acting wrongly, were sinning, and that caused the Shechina to distance themselves, and then the Kohenim's Chesed turned into kapdonus. Another way of looking at it is the Gemara often says Kohanim zrizim heim. The Kohanim are very quick to do their things in avoda, and therefore, so that's the kind of thing a person can use that midah of zrizus to be quick on the draw and to do things as fast as possible. But it can also come out from in a negative thing that therefore he's impatient with people who aren't as quick as him, and therefore that can lead to the kind of kapdonos that we're talking about over here. We even find, in fact, an interesting point. It actually says that. And so, first of all, the Gemara actually mentions elsewhere that we learned in Kiddushin that if you find somebody who has Azus Metzach, so first the Gemara had said that maybe it means that he's not descended from Jews, because we Jews are Rachmanim Baishonim and Gomlach Sadim. But then the Gemara says over there that no, if it's a Kohen, then don't worry about him. Fakir, that is a typical quality of Kohenim, as in that pasuk, the Gemara brings that pasuk, Va'am Chokim Rive Kohen. So the point is the Kohanim would be very quick tempered, and in the heat of their temper, they might want to divorce their wives, and therefore they're not going to be, and now if they do, they're not going to be able to remarry them because they're Kohanim. So Avdi Rabbanan Takanta, so the Chachamim made a takana of a get mekusher. And it takes a long time to prepare with all the details and everything that we have over here, the folding and the sewing, or the rolling up and the tying or whatever, and the extra edim. Meanwhile, they're going to calm down, and then he doesn't end up divorcing her, and therefore it saves their marriage. So that was the reason behind it. Now, in that case, then, so the Gemara asks, Chatenach Gittin, well, that explains why the Chachamim made that format then and used those psukim as an asmachta. Shtaris Ma'ikal Memer, what about other kinds of shtaris? Why should we use that format for them? And the answer is, ben Gittin l'shtaris. You don't want to have a distinction between Gittin and other kinds of shtaris. For one thing, once we have a type of shtar which is usable for a get, so we want to be able to use it for other kinds of shtaris as well. For one thing, Tosfa says people might see a shtar makusha and they're not familiar with it, and they're going to passel it. Then they're going to see a get makusha and they're not going to realize that this type was actually kosher and that it was actually made for the sake of kohenim, and therefore they're going to end up passeling it. Another point is also that if they don't write other shtore choiv or other shtores in this format, then they're going to end up stopping to do it by gittin as well, which in fact, again, historically, eventually that happened, and they stopped writing a get mekusher b'chlal. Which Tosfos actually brings up the point. So nowadays, if a Kohen is divorcing his wife, should we do a get mekusher? It sounds like from the Gemara over here, we're saying that there was a takana, they absolutely have to do that. On the other hand, Tosfa says that no, first of all, again, we're not familiar with the format, so therefore maybe we shouldn't do it. Second of all, maybe it was only a takana for one particular place where there were a lot of Kohanim. Maybe that doesn't necessarily apply in a place where you have many people from different types of Jews together, some Kohanim and some not. And the third thing, Tosfa says, it's not that the Chacham said you have to write a get mekusher, but it's a good idea to do that so that they don't end up divorcing their wives. But nevertheless, it's not an absolute requirement, and therefore they're not required to do that. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings up an interesting point. Here we're talking about a get. What Tosfos is talking about a get. What about a regular shtar? Where again, we're saying a regular shtar could be written, a shtar choiv, a shtar mecha, whatever, could be written as a get mekusher. Would that apply nowadays? There was an interesting machlokas of the poskim about whether you can do that. The Rama in fact says flat out, the Rama in Choshen Mishpat says flat out that if you were to write a shtar mekusher nowadays, it would he brings from the Nimuka Yosef and then the Rosh that it would that flat out that it would be possible. The Yeshchokin, and then he says other Rishonim argue and say that it would be kosher after all. But again, you see that over time people stopped writing that type of shtar, and the whole format was forgotten to the extent we have the machloikas Rishonim of how it's supposed to be written, and therefore you end up with a machloikas even in Shulchan Aruch whether you're even able to write a shtar makusher nowadays, whether you're able to write a shtar makusher nowadays or not. So the Shtach talks about it in more detail. And says that maybe it would be kosher after all. So maybe it would be kosher, even though we're not familiar with the format. But maybe not, because after all, the Rosh says that you didn't make it k'tikun chachamim, and here you're writing it not necessarily exactly the way the chachamim said to do it. So therefore, maybe it would be possible. And he goes back and forth on that. So the Gemara says, Heichan Edim Chosmin. Now, the next question is, so we have this Shtar Mekusher. We're saying that one of the differences is, we learned in the Mishnah, that the Edim sign on the back of it. So where exactly on a Shtar Mekusher are they signing? Rav Huna Omer Ben Kesher LeKesher. So Rav Huna says between one Kesher and the next. Now, again, a Kesher is going to be, according to Rashi and the Rashbam and the Rambam and so forth, according to most of the Rishonim, each Kesher is going to mean each pleat where they're sewn together. Again, the shtar is written in a format like a fan. So you have a line written and folded, a line written and folded, or according to Tosfos, two lines written and folded, two lines written and folded, whatever. And then each time it's sewn. So each of those places where it's sewn would be called a kesher, and then the edim are signing between those ksharim. According to the Yad Ramah, that means that you have strips of parchment sticking out from the ends, and you roll it closed, and you tie it closed with those. Then the kesher means those strips that are used to tie the document closed. Then you have the edim sign, according to Rav Huna, between one tie and the next.
The basic nusach is that written all on one, like on two lines together, the basic stuff that's been written by everyone?
So what we're saying is, what we said before is there's Poshut Shiba Makosher. You have, even within a Shtar Makosher, we said there is a part that's written Poshut, namely that's not folded or not rolled up or whatever. That would be the boilerplate, yeah, that would be the standard nusach that's written in all such shtaris.
So when you pick up this document from the table, you would be able to see that written, or that's going to be folded?
Yeah, no, that's what we're saying. That part, the boilerplate, you would be able to read as is. It's not folded. It's not folded or rolled or whatever. What's folded or rolled and sewn and sewn and tied or whatever would be the
details.
Would be the toref, the details, right? Right. So Rav Huna is saying again, what they do is that they're writing the signatures of the Edim between one Kesher and the next, which at this point the Gemara is assuming that means on the inside of the Shtar, which the Gemara is going to ask about that in a second. Rav Yirmi Abba says that the Edim sign behind the writing on the other side of the Shtar, and it has to be opposite, it has to be parallel to the ksav, parallel to the writing on the inside, not parallel to the blank part, but on the outside. Tosfos explains why Rabbi Yirmi Abba has to say all those details. Just say achore aksav, and it means on back of the parchment. If you only said achore aksav and keneged aksav without the word bachutz, then you would think Achorek Kneged Aksav might actually mean on the same side as the writing. Achorek Aksav would just mean, in other words, above the Ksav. In other words, if you didn't say the word Mibachutz, then you would think the signatures are on the inside of the Shtar, but it means instead of writing them at the bottom, like you do by regular Shtaris, you write them by the side next to the, you write them by the side next to the Ksav, Kneged Aksav. Achorek Aksav would mean like a, above it or something. And then if he only said Achorek, and then you would think that it means that he that it can be opposite the kesher, it can be opposite the folded and sewn parts. So we're saying no, it has to be a chodeh ksav. It has to be actually parallel to the ksav, to the actual writing. And mimachutz keneged ksav, you would think means you could sign on the side. So therefore, by clarifying, by using all these expressions, that Yumi Ba'aba is using all these expressions, achorei ksav or keneged ksav mimachutz, makes it clear that it means the signatures have to be on the reverse side of the shtar, but they have to be opposite the place where there's the writing, not just opposite the place where there's the blank spaces between the lines. And not above or below or next to the writing, but rather exactly opposite it. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Rami Bachama L'Rav Chista L'Rav Huna." Now we have to ask, "L'Rav Huna Do Amar Ben Kesher L'Kesher?" Now, if you're telling me according to Rav Huna that the Edim signed between one Kesher and the next, and Kosalka Daitin Ben Kesher L'Kesher Megavoi. Now it sounds like when we say Ben Kesher L'Kesher, it sounds like what we mean is that he's going to write the signatures between one line and the next on the inside of the shtar. So in other words, now Tosfos on Amud Aleph discusses, according to Rashi and the Rashbam, that you have, there's a blank space between one line and the next, and again, then you fold that over and you sew it. So it becomes understandable what Rami Bar Chama is asking. That conceivably, it sounds like it means that you write that the Edim sign their signatures in those blank spaces, which then are folded over. According to Tosfos, that you have two lines are the lines are written one after the other without a break. And then you just fold them over every two lines, one on top of the other, and you fold it and sew it. Then according to Tosfos, so they ask, what is Rami Bar Chama thinking? How would you be able to sign between the lines in the, how would you be able to sign between the lines in the first place? So one thing he says is because maybe they could squeeze in their signatures between one line and the next, Rami Bar Chama is thinking. But the question is, Rami Bar Chama asks, if that's how you do it, but how could that be? We know there was an example of a get makusher that was brought in front of Rebbe. And Rebbe said, wait, the shtar can't, how could the shtar, what's going on with the shtar? There's no date on it. Rebbe's son, Reb Shimon, says, he says, Shema ben Kshtorov Muvla, Maybe the date is actually hidden between the folds or between the ties. And sure enough, Palye, he opened it up for Chazye and he saw the date. So we see, in other words, the date was hidden in such a way and he couldn't find it. The Im Issa, if you're telling me, says Rami Bar Chama to Rav Chista, if you're telling me that according to Rav Huna, the Edim sign on the inside of the Shtar between one line and the next, Vim Issa, if you're going to tell me that, then Rebbe shouldn't just be wondering where the date is. He should also be wondering where the signatures of the Edim are, because the signatures of the Edim, until he unfolded it or untied it or whatever, he wasn't going to see the signatures of the Edim either. How can we understand that story according to Rav Huna's understanding of how a shtar of how the shtar is formatted? So Tosfos points out, according to the Yumi of Ba'aba, also if the Edim are signing, the Gemara is going to end up saying that the Edim are signed on the back of it. In other words, Tosfos asks, if Rebbe was under the impression that this is a get poshut and that's why he couldn't find the date, then he should be passing it anyway, according to the Yumi Ba'aba, because the Edim are on the outside. So Tosfos explains he did know that it was, of course, he knew of the concept of a get makusher. He didn't know certain dinim over here about how a get makusher is formatted, as we're discussing in this parak over here, and therefore Reb Shimon Berebi had to point out to him that the date is there, it's just hidden, and as far as the signatures of the Edim as well. But the question is, why didn't Rebbe wonder about the signatures in the first place? So you're thinking that Rav Huna is saying that the signatures are on the inside of the shtar between one line and the next. No, even Rav Huna agrees that that the signatures are on the outside. So therefore, so Rebbe, when he got a hold of the shtar, he wasn't wondering where the signatures of the Edim are. He could see them on the outside. The only question was about the date, which is written on the inside, on the front of the shtar, and that he couldn't find. Okay, so the Gemara is going to continue, actually, and the Gemara is going to continue with, in that case, then, according to Rav Huna, if the Gemara is going to deal with, then how do we avoid the problem of forgery? How do we avoid the problem? The whole point is, the reason why the Chachamim made these takonis, of the various takonis of shtaris, as we're going to learn in our perek, is to prevent people from adding things that they, from adding or changing things, and putting edim on it. So therefore, the Gemara is going to go through and explain how, according to Rav Huna, and how according to Rabbi Yemi Ba'aba, how do we avoid that when the signatures are on the back? So that will deal with tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
So when you find one of these gittim and it's untied, does that disqualify it?
So what we're saying is that to begin with, it was made tied. So now if you untie it to read it, fine, then that doesn't disqualify it. But it has to be that it was written according to the format of one that should be folded and sewn or rolled up and tied. And if not, then it's going to be puzzle. So in the Mishnah, we had Reb Chanina ben Gamliel pointing out that you could conceivably make a shtar mekosher into a shtar posher. And the Chacham are going to disagree with him, as we're going to see later on in the parak why that is. But obviously, for example, in this case, when Rebbe had to unfold it in order to be able to read the date, that didn't pass all the shtar because it was written to begin with in the proper format.
Right, but if it's a regular person undoing it, and if it's a bezin, it's different, obviously. But I thought maybe because if that purpose is that it should be the kosher, that it has to be tied, and here you're undoing the tie, so a regular person maybe would disqualify, but a bezin or a rav would be different. But
maybe, but it doesn't seem so. It seems, I guess in that case, you would need Adim. You'd need to have the Adim come and testify that it was Makusha when they wrote it, I guess. I don't know.
And the purpose of each line having a separate Adis, what is that's pointing out the strictness of it?
It is because of the strictness of it, but it's also, the Gemara is going to explain later on, we had something about it in Masechta Gittin as well. You can have a situation where a person comes to a bunch of people and he says, "Kulchem chasoimu. I want all of you to sign this get or this document." Now, me'ikir adin, you only need two. But nevertheless, you can have a case where a person comes to a bunch of people and he says, "Kulchem chasoimu. I want all of you to sign this." And then the din is all of them have to sign it. Two of them mitzad the dinim of Eidos and the rest of them mitzad the din of the Tanai. Now, if not all of them signed, then it would be possible because the Tanai hasn't been fulfilled. So if we have what we call a get kereach over here, if we have more, we assume to begin with that he made it with the proper number of, the number of pleats or the number of ties is going to be equal to the number of Edim that he plans to have sign on it. So now if we find later on that it has more pleats or more ties than Edim, then we have a problem. Maybe he asks, for example, for seven Edim to sign it and only six of them did, and then it's going to be possible because of the Tanai, and that's why we say it's a get kereach, and therefore we say it's possible.
Wow. Okay, well, a different thing with regard to a machat, the elephant going through a machat, was that in Sanhedrin or in Bavasra?
It was in Bav Metzia.